we all seem to be choosing our own preferred sources of information these days. You know, some of us probably still go to what do they call it, the gray lady or the old lady. I don't know what that particular sobriquet or nom de guerre is, but for the New York Times, but there's still people who go to the New York Times, and there are still people who go to Wall Street Journal. They ignore the fact that whatever these newspapers once were, they likely are not today. But again, I think this is more about feeling normal and feeling like life is normal than anything else. I think there are people who go to foreign affairs. You know, I know when I was in high school, I used to read foreign affairs. I even kept reading it in college and graduate school. In hindsight, I'm horrified by that because I know that foreign affairs, for all intents and purposes, is a mouthpiece of the national security state. So when you read foreign affairs, you're essentially reading what the CIA wants the quote-unquote political class to read. You know, and then there's The Economist, which again, you know, back in the day, you know, it was The Economist or it was the Christian Science Monitor. But in 2016, I don't know that there is an old journal or a new journal I pick up and say to myself, okay, well, here is the verifiable truth. Here is the truth without agenda. Here are just the facts. No more, no less than the facts. Here they are. I do not know that such a journal exists. I don't believe that that journal exists. I have not seen that weekly. I've not seen it. And you know, I think the tabloids, you know, the horrible st the tabloids, the Star magazines and the Weekly World News and all those horrible tabloids feel like they have a higher level of authenticity than most of the shit we're exposed to via the mainstream media. Even if it's not the print media, it's just absolutely worse when it comes to the, you know, to radio and television and what they publish to the internet. It's just even worse. So yes, it's difficult for me to have a conversation with people these days because a lot of it has to do with, you know, this question of where do you get your facts? Where do you get your truth? And I came to, and I don't know, I'm kind of stuck with this potential conclusion, but I don't really like it. It's a conclusion I'm stuck with, but it feels kind of terrible. And also it might be terrible because it's not necessarily that original. Like within this conclusion of mine, you can sense, you know, aspects of Foucault and a few others, but it is a conclusion that I'm going to throw out there nonetheless. But that may be all we're left with in 2016 when it comes to the news. And again, sarcastic air quotes should be imagined when I say the news. Maybe what we're left with are just competing narratives. Like, you know, President Obama's State of the Union address. You know, this was his last State of the Union address. I did not watch it. I could not watch it. I could not watch it. It would have been horrifying to watch. I could not do it. But I heard it happened. I don't know if he did his whole empty chair thing. That sounded horrifying, but I'm sure he must have contacted ancient demons or ghosts or something to tell all of us how terrible gun ownership is and how if we were to outlaw guns, there'd be no more guns in the streets. There must be a god of illogic and unhistory that has no understanding of how black markets function that would sit next to Obama during a State of the Union. Is there a state of the of his union of the union? Yeah, it would take a demon to convince people of that. I don't know. Even then, I would hope for discernment, right? But whatever. But no, they're all narratives. You know, Obama has a narrative. He saved America. You know what? Bush had the same narrative. I saved America. Clinton had a similar kind of narrative. I saved America. Every president has that narrative, especially if they're a two-term president. You know, they saved America. If it weren't for them, holy heck would have broken loose or whatever. I mean, yeah, I guess Bush left in a kind of a crappy year, but let's be honest, I'm not entirely convinced Obama's going to leave in a non-crappy year. There's a limit to how much bullshit can be shoveled, and I think that, yeah, they're running out of shovels. So here is the situation. We pick and choose a narrative. I choose a narrative, you choose a narrative. You know, I wish I could say we were going to pick and choose sources of verifiable truth, but I just don't know that that can be true. And I'm even going to throw something else out there. I'm not sure it was ever true. You know, when people talk about the golden age of journalism, I'm a historian, or at least I used to be. And when I was once a historian, I was at least smart enough and skeptical enough to say, well, you know, okay, maybe that's true, but where is your evidence? Because if you look into the past, there is very little evidence that the news has ever been unbiased. In fact, it's probably impossible to avoid. In fact, if you go back to the news, like the original news, the news that existed for both mankind and prehistoric man, but let's just say unliteral man or man and woman without text, without words that can be written down. If you think about the oral history kind of news, which ultimately means mythology and things like that, the news of the past was not about as much guaranteeing the highest resolution version of reality. The news of the past was about being able to remember what happened. Now, I know that may not seem like those forces are in opposition, but they really kind of are. There is a strange dynamic between our ability to memorize symbols and keep hold of the meaning of those symbols versus our, you know, absolutely maybe eidetic memory or whatever of what actually happened down to some level of a brain pixel if something like that even existed. The simple answer is that we remember symbols. We can deal with symbolic stories. Stories are great for us, especially if we can't write it down, because we can retell those stories. So even if eventually what started out with as some news report from the Trojan Wars ends up as the Homeric Tales, and again, you know, I'm not begrudging Homer any ownership of this, but ultimately that's because of the fact that that's how, you know, the news was spread. It was oral history. It was spread by word. And you know, that particular way in which news was spread still existed until, I would say, even quite recently. Because even if you think about, like, for example, the frontier in the Old West, folks back in the day, they weren't, you know, many of them couldn't read. You know, they weren't literate. They had no, you know, they didn't have the ability to even read the newspaper if they found one. But they did like to listen to stories. And you know what? I'm sure back in the day, they probably paid the smart guy to read the stories from the newspaper. And when the guy read the stories, he probably had to fill in the blanks because most of these folks, even if they heard the word, probably wouldn't understand it. Now, that's not to say people were stupid. They weren't stupid. They were focused on other things. And their narrative at the time wasn't about the Crimean War. Their narrative at the time was, how do I put food on the table? I'm living in the middle of nowhere. What would I do if someone got sick? I mean, that was the narrative of the frontiersman in the middle of the 19th century in the Old West, you know, in the old Midwest and West, was, you know, how do I survive this? They really didn't give a shit about the Crimean War. Maybe some of them did, but probably most of them were primarily interested in survival. So, yeah. We pick and choose narratives. I choose a narrative, you choose a narrative. Obama, President Obama has a narrative. I remember Reagan's narrative. It was wonderful. It was morning in America. Of course, that ignores the whole national security state that more or less came into existence under Reagan, in its current form. But you know, that's not part of the narrative. So just pretend it didn't happen. And I guess this kind of leaves us in a difficult spot, because if this is true, if it is all about choosing narratives, then the only real issue in play is which narrative wins. And in that kind of a world, you know, the outcomes can be horrific. I mean, if the narrative of an Adolf Hitler wins, it's kind of terrible, because part of that narrative is, you know, you've got to kill all the Jews. And if the narrative of a Joseph Stalin wins, it's equally terrible, because you know that pretty much a lot of people are going to die in some indiscriminate way. If it's the narrative of someone else, someone decent, someone with more of a mammalian brain than a reptilian brain. I mean, if it's the narrative of someone that gives a damn about the dignity of human beings and their ability and access to human liberty. I mean, if it's the narrative of human creativity and art form rather than the narrative of murder, that's the narrative I'd like to support, the narrative of the dynamic creative poetry of existence and not the narrative of destruction. Currently, the narrative of destruction is winning. If Donald Trump is for real, I still doubt that, but if he is for real, then the narrative of destruction is the one that most Americans want to support, the narrative of revenge and destruction, revenge against some force that did something to them. But it's a lot like Hamlet, isn't it? Because we wander as mad, mad, crazy people through a castle of our ancestors, through a castle built by our fathers and our mothers, a castle of lies. See, I think that's the true narrative of America today. The narrative of America today is a lot like Hamlet. It's a lot like madness. We want revenge and we're so angry, but we do not know the very force we're angry with, the entity we seek to destroy, is ourselves.